Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Steve Junker. It's Friday, February 1st. This is our weekly news roundup when we discuss some of the top local news stories of the week with colleagues in the print and digital media. Joining me in the studio from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane.
Good morning, Steve.
And joining us later will be Landry Harland from the Vineyard Gazette. We'll speak with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner, and we'll check in with Brian Dowd at the Martha's Vineyard Times. Now, a look at some of the news here around the Cape and the islands. Jeff, let's start this week with news that the Wampanoag tribe of Gayhead Aquinnah is opposing a federal bill to protect the land rights of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe. And what they really want here is to be included in this bill, it sounds like.
They do. And, you know, it's been a tough few weeks for the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe, Steve. This bill was refiled in January by Congressman Keating. And it's designed to end the legal challenge to the Mashpee tribe's land and trust, the 320 acres they have in Mashpee and Taunton. Of course, Taunton being for a casino site. Well, last week, the Wampanoag tribe of Gayhead over on the Vineyard, the Aquinnah tribe, sent a letter to the Mass Gaming Commission saying that they are opposed to the legislation. It would have an adverse effect on their ability to acquire additional land off the island. And the tribal chairman says that about three-quarters of the members of the Aquinnah tribe actually live in southeastern Massachusetts, not on the island. So her take on it is that they should be included in the bill, because if the Congress is going to reaffirm the Mashpee tribe's right to have land and trust in that area, they need to do so for the Aquinnah tribe as well.
Keating's office responding, saying,
"Yeah, they said that they
Keating,
certainly
who has
work
filed
with them.
This bill, yes,
he did file the bill. I'm not sure if it's been refiled in the Senate yet, but Elizabeth Warren and Markey did it the last session. But they're saying, yeah, you know what? But we're really trying to. They're in the process of having their land taken away, the Mashpee tribe. Mm-hmm. So we really want to focus on that right now, but we will work with the Aquinnah tribe on any issues they have.
And again, this bill is intended to take away the possibility that the tribe could lose a huge amount
of land. There's been a lot of litigation, and back in September, the Department of the Interior reversed a decision that was made in 2015 that the tribe could have this reservation, and the reason being that the tribe was not under federal jurisdiction at the time of the Indian Reorganization Act in 1934. And I think the legislation has been filed because, from all indication, is the current administration is probably not inclined to move on this right now.
And this would be a way to sidestep waiting for the Department of Interior.
It would end the litigation. The land would remain a trust, and the tribe could move forward with their plans. And that, of course, would include, if they move forward, the site of the First Light Casino in Taunton. But the Aquinnah tribe actually has a bingo hall in development over in Aquinnah. And the 485-acre reservation that they have over there.
A lot of pieces at play here in this story. The contention over a proposed new regional middle school for Dennis Yarmouth is continuing, and right now that's meant that work is stopping on the design for this potential school.
Yeah, it's a little bit on the backstory here. In early December, the Dennis Yarmouth School District, there was a vote. It was a very narrow victory to build a new school there in the district with 25-vote margin to build a $117 million new regional middle school.
Just 25 votes on this.
25 votes.
Between the two towns of Dennis and Yarmouth.
Between the two towns. Yarmouth voted against it. Dennis voted for it. So now there's a lawsuit that's happening. The town of Yarmouth says, hey, Dennis Yarmouth School Committee, you probably should have gone to town meeting for this instead of bypassing town meeting and go directly to the voters. But the issue at play here is the state would reimburse the district $44.3 million for this new school. But they have to move on pretty quickly. So I believe it's by April 11th they need to tell the state that we're going to be moving forward with this, sign a letter of commitment and say, hey, yeah, no, we're going to move forward. But with this lawsuit pending, it seems to be in a state of limbo. So the design work on the project has stopped. And a school committee member said, if Yarmouth chooses to file a lawsuit, then we're going to lose this funding from the state. And it would appear that once that train has left the station, if they lose that funding, it could be years and years and years till they get back up on the list again to have a priority in that district.
Yarmouth has issues with the way this school district is the document that sort of sets out who pays for what within the school, the regional school district.
Yeah, it appears that the two towns have been bickering a little quite a while about the regionalization agreement between the two towns based on the funding formula, where right now it is DUI pays for charter students, so many, even though a lot of them are from Dennis, they're saying, hey, it would be a little fairer if we had the funding based on what they call foundation enrollment, which is all the school-age kids in the town.
And the school superintendent here, Carol Woodbury, pointing out that if the design on this process comes to a halt now, it has downstream effects. Everything starts to cascade.
It moves everything back. It moves everything back. Right now, she said, at least a semester.
And so, again, this is the town of Yarmouth potentially suing to dispute this entire vote.
Right,
but
right.
The lawsuit hasn't even been filed yet, so there's a lot of waiting and seeing what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
But they have this April deadline in which they have to resolve this between the towns.
That's a lot of money, $44.3 million.
The town of Brewster, meanwhile, has been going through some upheaval in its administration in the past year. We've talked about this on and off on the roundup. Mm-hmm. Now they've chosen a new town administrator.
They do. A gentleman named Peter Lombardi is a town administrator in Wenham, a very nice community on the North Shore. He was chosen on Saturday, and he beat out finalist Dan Hort, who's a town manager in Wellfleet. So the other candidate from the Cape came in second here. The interviews were on Saturday, and apparently the board was very impressed with Mr. Lombardi and the work he's done off Cape. He's been involved in the government in several coastal communities off Cape, Newburyport, Winthrop. And a lot of the awards that he's won for his budget presentations. He also stressed transparency in government, which, of course, is very important these days. And he will be taking the place of the former town manager, Michael Embry, who resigned in June due to issues with the town finances. There was quite a bit of irregularity found with account ledgers and the general ledgers not being reconciled in town. And a lot of large expenditures, a lot of money being spent with town meeting approval. And haven't heard the end of that either. There's an audit ongoing.
You can understand why transparency is a big
– that's why it would be a big issue.
A big issue here is they're looking for a candidate.
Brewster. And Mark Forrest, who's a Yarmouth selectman, of course, well-known here in the Cape political circles, has been the interim manager there. And we should say that Mr. Hort, while he finished second, looks like he's going to be okay because the Wellfleet Board of Selectmen has agreed to sign him on for another contract.
Yes. They seem quite happy with his work there.
He do.
We're going to speak right now with Landry Harlan at the Vineyard Gazette. Good morning, Landry.
Good morning, Steve.
Landry, the Island Airport continues to be a source of scrutiny and concern. A couple of big meetings around the airport issues this week. Let's start with one that provided an update on the contamination at some private wells near the airport. Tell us about this.
Yes, so this investigation has been going on since November. It involves this chemical called PFAS that is used in firefighting foam, really all in airports all across the country. It's only recently become known that this chemical is dangerous if ingested. So the airport here, it's been sprayed upon the ground for testing for years and seeped into the soil, into the groundwater, which is then flowed into some private wells close to the airport. So tests since November have found that some of these wells have concentrations of this chemical above the safe guidelines set by the state, and some even are considered wells of immediate concern. So we had the environmental consultant come in this week and explain that those wells that are a health hazard, those homes will receive filtration systems and bottled water indefinitely in the short term, while the consultant looks into more long-term solutions for mitigation, really getting this chemical out of the soil altogether. But again, this is an emerging issue nationwide. Not a lot is known about it. No federal regulations as of yet. So there's really a lot of confusion around the issue, and we expect to hear more about it in the coming months.
And then tell us about plans for the airport to expand. Another discussion around that. That was last night?
Yes, it was. It really has been a big week for the airport. So last night was kind of the first public airing of this issue has really become the talk of the island about the possible expansion of the airport. This involves more than doubling the size of the airport terminal, building more aircraft hangars, adding over 500 parking spaces. And really, it's in the very early stages right now. We're going through an environmental review. There's a lot of, again, federal, state, local hurdles that have to jump over to get to the steps for actual construction. But a lot of people turned out last night concerned. They really see this island and treasure it, you know, for its small feel. Even one person said bigger is not always better. And they also had environmental concerns because expanding the airport would go into land that's considered rare species habitat. And there's the possibility that it could damage our sole source aquifer if anything happens to the water supply. So, again, the airport leaders stress that this is needed because the airport is getting so crowded in the summer, it really can't handle the load of people that come over to enjoy the island in the summer, so they need more room. But there's really going to be a push and pull between, you know, these seasonal residents who want to be more comfortable when they come through and the year-round residents who say, this isn't really for us, this isn't our style, and we prefer it if we kept it as is. But again, this is the early stages, so it'll be a while before any construction happens, and we'll hear much more about this soon as well.
And this is all happening at a time when the director at the airport has announced that she's going to be leaving.
Right. So she announced last week that she will be leaving in May.
And Richard.
Big surprise.
Yeah. And Landry Harlan from the Vineyard Gazette. Landry, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. With us from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. We're going to the break now. When we come back, we'll speak with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. There's more in a moment. And welcome back. This is the News Roundup on The Point. We're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Steve Junker, and with me from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. Jeff, in Falmouth, the Board of Health will be revisiting a vote on a needle exchange. The previous location for this drew a lot of criticism from some community members, and the group that was putting it together decided not to open that location. Bring us up to date.
Yeah, this is the latest in this controversial saga, Steve. And that location was on Route 28 across from St. Anthony's Church. And as you had mentioned, the AIDS support group of Cape Cod did decide to abandon the plans to locate there because of all the controversy. So right now, the group is working with State Rep David Vieira to find a better location in town. But meanwhile, there's a move afoot to have the Falmouth Board of Health reconsider the vote that they took back in the fall, I believe it was in November, to support the facility. The Board of Health, while they didn't take a vote, if they sent in a letter of support to the state, the AIDS support group of Cape Cod would be eligible for state funding. So that's why it was important for them to do that. A lot of the folks in Falmouth who are opposed to this are saying, yeah, you know, we really didn't know a lot about this. You know, we didn't know this meeting was happening, et cetera. So they want them to take a look at that letter, maybe reconsider it, take it back. In the meantime, Representative Vieira has filed legislation that would change the way that this is done in the state, where you would any type of a needle exchange program or similar facility would need a Board of Health vote, not just a letter. And it would have to be done at a public meeting, and the address of the proposed facility must be known to the townspeople. That was another big concern of Falmouth. A lot of people did not know where it was going to be located. When they found out it was across from St. Anthony's, it was a kind of a shock. It would also, and this is very very key here with Representative Vieira's legislation, it would make private entities who receive no state funding subject to the same process. If you remember about 2 years ago, there was a big controversy in Hyannis with the AIDS support group of Cape Cod's needle exchange on South Street. It went all the way to the highest court in the state. And they said, hey, you know, if this is a private entity, they aren't taking any state funding, you know what, they can do this. So it looks like President Vieira is trying to make that make the private entities subject to this as well.
And in the meantime, David Vieira is working with the AIDS support group or in conversation with them about – a possible new location.
About a possible new location in town. And I spoke with Representative Vieira a couple of weeks ago, and it's not that he doesn't recognize that there's a need for this. He just doesn't think it was the right location.
And this is not just a needle exchange. This
no.
is providing other services,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, hepatitis, HIV screening, as well as for other sexually transmitted diseases, and also a place where, you know, you can pick up Narcan.
And possibly some counseling services.
Counseling services,
as well,
exactly.
Yes.
Very similar to what they offer in Hyannis.
We should mention there is an open meeting law complaint that's been mm-hmm. filed against the Board of Health for the way that they took that vote back in the fall on sending the letter of support to the AIDS support group of Cape Cod that wanted to open that needle exchange. We are going to speak right now with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Steve.
Tim, a couple of weeks back, we talked about the historic Monomoy Theater being for sale in Chatham there and the efforts to preserve it as a playhouse. Now there's word that the property is under agreement. Tell us what we know about who the buyer may or may not be.
Well, unfortunately, there's not much I can tell you about that. Just this week, as you said, we learned that the property is under agreement. But at this point, the identity of the buyer is unknown. The buyer has not been identified. And you can understand that's prompting a bit of anxiety here among the group of theater supporters who were trying to save it, to preserve, you know, this 80-year theater. And also a lot of residents here who are concerned what might happen with this 3-acre parcel that's right in downtown Chatham. Should a developer be the buyer and look to maximize the possibility of that land, which is zoned commercial?
There was a group that had stepped forward that was that they said they were hoping to be able to buy this to continue the theater.
Indeed, it was a group of local residents. They formed. They're in the process, actually, of forming a company in order to. What their plan was to buy the property and then sell it to a nonprofit that would run this popular theater. They did reportedly put in an offer, but there was a competing offer which apparently won out. The Boston real estate company that's listing the property confirmed that there is an agreement, but they wouldn't provide any additional information, either identifying who that is or what the possible implications of that are. Now, the listing of the property that mentions that there is an agreement says that it has contingencies, which means that there could be certain restrictions or actions that need to happen in order for the sale to go through. So, you know, theater supporters aren't giving up yet. They're seeing that there could be a possibility that this agreement could fall through. Also this week, the Board of Selectors came out
the agreement
of keeping the land as a theater. And, you know, as we talked about
years
last time, Steve, one of the factors in the decision by the Steinler family, which has owned the property for many years, one of the factors in their decision to sell was that the town had cited some health and safety violations in the dorm rooms used by the summer theater students who go to Monomoy Theater. And the selectmen said this week that, you know, they're willing, town departments are willing to work with a new owner to facilitate those improvements so that the theater could reopen this summer. So the town is really interested in keeping this a theater. The Tyler Universities, they need to be getting their ducks in line by mid-March, according to Alan Rust, who's the theater director. So there's going to be some issues around that. The agreement on the property calls for a closing to happen by April 30th, which is after the sort of mid-March time that Alan Rust has told us he needs a decision on whether the theater can open this summer. So there's still a lot of unknowns here, and nobody's giving up yet. The theater people tell me, but they're not. They're not as optimistic as they might have been a couple weeks ago.
Tim Wood, the Cape Cod Chronicle. Tim, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
With us from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. And Jeff, Many Cape school districts are looking at the potential for significant shortfalls in state funding when it comes to their charter school students. Your reporter from the Cape Cod Times, Cindy McCormick, wrote this story, and there's a lot here.
She did, and I admire her for getting her arms around this, because it's, if you take a look at it, it's like an SAT math problem. Residents of towns that school-age children that go to charter schools, the money that the town would be receiving to educate those children is sent to the charter school. So the money follows the kids. That's at the crux of this. And so the State Department of Revenue has issued some estimates as to how the reimbursement process is going to work this coming year. And a lot of the towns on the Cape are going to take a big hit. Sandwich, which has received $492,000 this past year, is in line to get $235,000 next year.
So a difference of about $250,000.
Yeah, less than half. And, of course, they're taken quite aback by this. And Barnstable is going to lose $141,000. Actually, every town on the Cape is going to lose some money, except Mashpee. They're going to actually receive $20,000 more. School districts must fully pay the tuition for these students who go to charter schools, but the state pays back a percentage of that. And it's a formula that works, and the best that I can tell, 100% the first year, and then it goes down to 6 years. And you say, well, gee, you don't go to high school for 6 years typically.
Right.
But it is to help the schools plan, because they don't know from as far ahead as they should how many students they will have going to these charter schools. So they need to have the staff in place and the programs in place. So that reimbursement is also based upon budget constraints in the state, and that's why we're seeing some of these cuts. Sturgis Charter School in Hyannis, there's two campuses there. That is where the majority of the students go. They have 838 students now. They're going to cap that out at 850, which they're going to reach next year. So there is a move afoot, too, on Beacon Hill to change the way that this formula is done, so that it's done over a course of 3 years versus six.
Now, Bud Dunham, who's with the town of Sandwich, is quoting this story as saying that the towns have no choice but to –
they have to allocate
this money to follow the students when they go to charter schools.
Right.
But the state does not necessarily follow through on its obligations.
Exactly.
Which leaves the towns in this lurch because they have to make up the shortfall if the state decides, well, this year we're going to have a different funding
model. There's good intentions, but they might not have it in their coffers. So interesting. Some of these school districts in these certain towns are really going to have to take a hit this year.
Although they did say that this is a preliminary mm-hmm. budget proposal that's coming down from the state that has these numbers that are making the town sit up and notice, but it's still being negotiated up at the State House.
That's right.
They're hoping that the final bill will not look like this, the final budget.
Not set in stone yet.
Let's speak now with Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Jeff.
Casey, how are you?
Good.
Casey, a big change is happening at the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, not with the sanctuary itself, but the longtime director there is retiring.
That's right. Bob Prescott will actually have been there 37 years when he retires in September. He is only the second director in the 60-year history of the Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. And the first was this man named Wallace Bailey, who was there for 25 years. And he was also a very well-known warrior and character for the environment, and who was known to stand in the marsh on the sanctuary property when the planes were dropping insecticide in the marsh back in the 1950s. And the pilots didn't dare do it when Wallace Bailey was around. And then came Bob Prescott. He was only 24 years old when he gave up his PhD pursuit to move into an 18-room research station that had been owned by the original property owners, Dr. Oliver Austin and his son, Oliver Austin Jr. The Austins were very passionate birders, and they are said to have banded, along with their summer staff, half a million birds in 25 years on that property before Mass Audubon bought it in 1958. So this is the home, the rambling farmhouse owned by the Austins that Prescott moved into in 1982. He worked alone as the only paid staff member in the sanctuary at first, but over the next three decades, he completely transformed the place until Now it has this very welcoming new visitor center with composting toilets. There are 50 seasonal staff and 400 volunteers. And it's these volunteers, many of them older or retired, who always wanted to work in nature, who Bob Prescott and his staff have really engaged in an amazing way. They go out every winter and pull stranded sea turtles off of the beach, and they also monitor the threatened diamondback terrapin nests to help more of these threatened turtles make it into adulthood. And Bob told me he never would have wanted to have been the executive director of a quiet, retiring bird sanctuary unless it did engage the public. And so he's certainly done that over that amount of time. But as the Cape Cod Times story also mentioned today, he wasn't just friendly and personable. He was more than just an outreach guy. He was also a real warrior and fighter for the environment. And during my interview with him, he made a point of telling me he had two major disappointments over his career. One was the fact that Orleans, for 30 years, did not put sewers around Town Cove to protect the water quality of that water of that area, and the failure of the state to set some real limits on the fishing of horseshoe crabs, these prehistoric creatures that Bob said have not regained in population in 30 years. So he's leaving in September, and he wants to give the Mass Audubon plenty of time to hire somebody new because he says, you know, he wants them to be ready to go as soon as he leaves. He told me, you know, we don't want to lose any ground. We cannot afford to.
He was not an academically credentialed biologist, but your article points out what incredible respect people have for him within the field.
Yeah, he really kept up with the research. He might not have the degrees but to back it up, but the New England Aquarium, the woman I spoke with from the New England Aquarium, said he kept up on all the research. He read everything modern, the latest research, and one of his goals as in retirement is to publish, do more publishing.
So after 37 years, Bob Prescott stepping down there. Casey Myers from the Provincetown Banner. Casey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
With me from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. Jeff, I want to talk about another story also from your reporter Cindy McCormick at the Cape Cod Times. Mm-hmm. This has to do with the Waldorf School of Cape Cod. It's been using a building that's leased from the town of Barnstable, and now the town is ending that lease.
Yeah, this is the Waldorf School. It has about 60 students, Steve. It's in Cotuit, and students are in pre-K to 8th grade in private school. And the town of Barnstable did, on January 9th, decide they were not going to renew the lease at the end of the school year and wants the Waldorf School to leave the premises by June 30th. The school now is saying, and the reason being because they fell behind in rent, $75,000 at one point. That is down to about $20,000 now. The lease is for about approximately $5,000 per month. But it was because they fell behind on the lease payments. Now the school has a petition. There's about 1,000 names as of yesterday where they're saying, hey, you know what? Can you give us some more time? By June 30th, that's not going to give us a new time to find a location for the school. And they're saying we really need 18 months. And according to a spokesperson for the school, they said the intent with this lease was should it not be renewed, we would have 540 days to find a new facility. That's 18 months. And the town manager said he's been getting a lot of calls and the school's been trying to reach him. He said it's really not my decision. He needs to go back to the school committee. But apparently the school committee is standing pat with this decision that the school needs to leave by June 30th.
I think there's about 60 students there at mm-hmm. the school. And school has a long history on Cape Cod. It was started in one place and moved to another, and then finally is out there.
Started right here in Woods Hole, 1984, and it's a very unique school. I have a lot of friends whose children go there. In addition to the academics they expect for those grades, it incorporates music, dance, literature, and myths into the program. And it started here in Woods Hole, went to Bourne, has been in Cotuit for the past 10 years. And the school leadership said, yeah, we're hoping to stay there 20 years.
where they are now.
Where they are now. And it does cost about $15,000 tuition per year. I think only about 25% actually pay that. They're very generous with scholarships. And the chair of the Barnstable School Committee said, you know, it just came down to that we have a fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers.
This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. With us from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. We're going to go to the break now. When we come back, we'll speak with Brian Dowd at the Martha's Vineyard Times. There's more in a moment. Welcome back. This is the News Roundup on The Point. We're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Steve Junker. With me from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. And on the phone with us right now is Brian Dowd of the Martha's Vineyard Times. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Brian, you've got a few stories representing the enthusiasm of vineyarders for this Sunday's Super Bowl, which, of course, features once again the New England Patriots. Tell us about the island artist who's created a mural at the stadium where the Super Bowl is this year.
Yeah, so Dan Van Landingham is a local artist from West Tisbury, and he got his master's degree in painting from the Savannah College of Art and Design in Georgia. And a couple years ago, the college got commissioned by the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which was the new football stadium that was being built there in Atlanta. They got commissioned to basically fill the stadium with a bunch of original artwork, painting, sculptures, photography. And Dan's school reached out to him and asked if he would like to do a painting, which, of course, he was very excited to do. And so Dan painted a gigantic 9 by 18 feet mural of the Atlanta skyline that has the Mercedes-Benz stadium in it, and it's titled the ATL. And it was kind of this really intense, long project that Dan got to do. It took about 2.5 years to finish, and that involved designing it, planning it, and then 5 months of actually painting it in a little studio up in Chilmark, and then rolling it up, bringing it down to Atlanta, and spending close to 12 hours putting the whole thing together with a team.
It also incorporates some neon into the painting. You've got some nice pictures on the website of Dan and his piece and what it was like to go from Chilmark to the Atlanta Stadium to install it. It's a great story.
Treasure is the...
You have a story about a restaurant owner on the island
who's a football
fan and made an offer sometime back in the season that may end up costing him a fair amount of money.
Yeah, so J.B. Blau is the owner of Sharky's restaurant and a couple other restaurants on the island. And back in mid-December, when the Patriots had just lost two,
that is an
things weren't looking good, spirits were down, JB decided to post on Facebook, if the Patriots go to the Super Bowl and they win by 4 points, at least 4 points, all the people that like this post will get a $250 gift card if they attend the Sharky's Super Bowl party. And when I was talking to JB about it, he said that it was to be honest, he said he didn't really know why he did it, but he was just trying to lift everyone's spirits up.
It was a moment. It did not seem very likely that this would happen. The Patriots would be there with a 4-point advantage. Yes,
exactly. But of course, you know, you can't really bet against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And he said he knew there was a chance they'd make it, and of course they did. And so he's sweating a little bit now because come Sunday, so 472 people liked that post back in December, and if every single one of those people comes and stays for the whole party and the Patriots win by more than 4 points, JB will be out about $118,000.
So you mentioned here there's some rules to this contest, and one of them is that everybody has to who liked that post has to show up for the Super Bowl party and stay for the entire duration of the party.
Yeah, they have by midnight tonight actually to respond and RSVP to the party. If they can't attend, they'll be eligible for the large amount, and then if they can't attend,
JB's still going to give them a $50 gift card if, you know, everything works out and the Patriots win.
I think the betting line I last heard was about 3.5 points on the game. So it's pretty close to that 4-point spread that we're talking about here.
Yeah, and JB said, yeah, he'll be he's a little nervous. He's excited, but definitely be nervous the entire game.
It'll make a different level of excitement for him watching the game tonight, I'm sure. I'm sure he wants them to win, but maybe not by the 4 points, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And lastly, I want to get to kind of as a preview and a prediction for the games. You went to a very experienced football source on the island. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so the island's high school football coach, Don Herman, sat down with the Times and gave a pretty cool interview and a preview for the Super Bowl. And, you know, Coach Herman knows everything there is to know about football, and he kind of gave his takes on the Rams, the Patriots, the NFL in general, and just about the big game. And our photo editor, Gabrielle Menino, made a pretty cool video that's online that people can check out where we interview Coach Herman. And I think the biggest takeaway is that he said the Patriots, you know, if they want to win, they need to get things going early because in past Super Bowls that they've lost, it's usually that they get overwhelmed early on in the game, and that's what affects them later on.
Well, we'll be watching. Brian Dowd from the Martha's Vineyard Times. Brian, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Steve.
With us from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. Jeff, turning away from football for a moment here, the town of Mashpee is trying to understand how it can best winnow the field of applicants who want to open a recreational marijuana business.
That's right. And Steve, this in October, the voters at Mashpee Town Meeting did reject a proposed ban on recreational marijuana businesses in the town. So it joined Provincetown, Truro, Wellfleet, and Eastham as the towns on the Cape that would allow recreational marijuana businesses. But the formula that they came up with and compare, you know, a percentage of liquor licenses will only allow one business to operate in town. Well, there are now 6 applicants for that one license. And it was brought up at the Board of Selectmen meeting this week. And it's all new to them, as you would expect.
Yes, everybody in town level trying to deal with this.
That's right. This is not, you know, they're not trying to approve a liquor store. You need to remember that it's the State Cannabis Control Commission that actually awards the licenses, but the town needs to craft a host community agreement with the vendor and then submit it to the Cannabis Commission.
So the town's expected to identify one of these 6 applicants, make a host community agreement with them.
Right, yes. And this is not something they've done before, and so they weren't ready to move on it, obviously, at this first meeting this week. So they asked town manager Rodney Collins, you know, we need to come up with some type of a process here. How do we go about vetting these 6? What do we do around building codes, zoning bylaws, other regulations, access, egress, fire protection? And not only that, finding out who wants the licenses. I'm sure you're going to have to do quite a few checks. It was also brought up, too, that some of the folks that are applying for these licenses, people on the board know. Uh-huh. So it is a very interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But Rodney Collins, the town manager, is expected to come back with a process as soon as possible. I wouldn't be surprised if it was going to be later this month. And there are 6, as I had mentioned, 6 applicants, some of them very interesting. One of them, of course, is Triple M, which already has a medical dispensary in Mashpee. One is Richard Catania, who owns the Wicked Pizzeria in town. And one particular proposal I thought was interesting was to operate a recreational marijuana business on Route 151, and a percentage of the sales would go to the Boys and Girls Club of Cape Cod.
So right now it looks like the town's going to have to figure out a way to vet all those and figure out which one that they're going to go with.
Exactly.
Jeff, you've got a piece. Well, let's talk about the cold weather first. The cold weather we had yesterday was nothing like what people saw in other parts of the country, but it certainly was cold enough, and advocates for the homeless jump into action when this kind of temperature
drop happens. Yeah, it certainly was cold enough. It was cold this morning, too, and so you got to imagine what's it like to be homeless during this type of conditions. And, of course, last year we went through a long spell of very cold weather. And there is a significant homeless community here in the Cape, especially in Hyannis. And it sounds like they really have their plans ready to trigger at any given time when the weather forecast says we're going to have particularly cold weather. St. Joseph's House, which is a shelter in Hyannis, used to be known as a NOAA shelter. They have 50 beds, but when it gets below 28 degrees, and also when it gets below a wind chill of 28 degrees, they can add 10 more beds. Duffy Health Center gets together with the Department of Mental Health. They get out into the streets in advance. They try to notify the homeless population and also let the police know about any folks at risk. And when the shelter fills up, and as you can well imagine, it would, and some people don't even actually go to the shelter because they have behavioral or medical problems, there is a program that the towns on the Cape in conjunction with the United Way have. It's called In From the Streets, where they will actually put some of these homeless folks up in hotels for a few days to get them out of the elements, about 30 to 50 people per year. And also the State Senator Julian Sear did get a $45,000 grant from the state to create what's called a pop-up shelter. So I thought it was very interesting. We hear about pop-up stores on Newbury Street, et cetera. But this is a pop-up shelter that would be either at a church basement, another facility. It would only open when the conditions get particularly rough. Unfortunately, it's not ready to go this year. But the money that was allocated for that was put into the In From the Streets program.
There was also mentioned in this article about a Chatham knitting and bookshop, which has gotten together and to really do an interaction to get people involved with helping here.
Yeah, and it's a knit-a-thon, they call it, but it's actually not in one place in Chatham. It was called Balls Folks from 10 different states. They knit blankets for the homeless. This started 4 years ago when they knitted 29 blankets, and this year they expect to knit 250.
With 240 knitters, which means more than one blanket per knitter. I'm impressed by that.
Exactly. Likewise.
Jeff, you do have a piece this week in the paper about an ongoing effort by some Centerville residents to block a cell antenna from going in. Tell
us. And this is a controversy, Steve, that's gone on for, it'll be a year in April. A lot of cell towers, antennas, a lot of telecommunications equipment is hidden in church steeples. And I think you'd be surprised as to where some of it is. And T-Mobile, the wireless carrier, was putting six cell antennas in the steeple of the historic South Congregational Church on South Main Street in Centerville. They did have a building permit to do it. Neighbors in the area and the villagers found out about this. They became very upset. Why weren't we included in the planning of this? Very, very concerned about health effects from this equipment. And of course, being so close to the community, a library, school, et cetera. So there's a group there that's very active in trying to stop this. And what happened was last summer, it was determined that the church is actually in the Cape Cod Commission District of Critical Planning Concern. Mm-hmm. So you really can't alter any of the historical buildings there. Well, there's an argument, oh, hey, you can't see this, it's in the steeple, but the town pulled the building permit. So now T-Mobile is trying to – it's two different ways they can overturn that and get in there. The Zoning Board of Appeals of Barnesville said, you know, we're not sure if we have the jurisdiction here, but we're going to hire an independent consultant in the telecommunications industry. We'll engage a consultant. T-Mobile, you'll pay for it. And if we comes back that says there is a really dangerous coverage gap here, mm-hmm. this is the only place it can go – then, you know, we're going to base our decision on that. Simultaneously, T-Mobile is approaching the planning board in Barnesville saying, hey, can you give us a little relief here from these regulations because we really need this for our business. This report we found out this week should be available fairly soon. It's been received by the town of Barnesville. They're tweaking it right now. They've had some questions, and they've gone back to the consultant. And I expect that we'll know more about this in the coming weeks, but it's going to bring up an interesting scenario. If it comes out and says, yeah, you know what, you got to put this there because people who have T-Mobile service, you know, the Telecom Act of 1996 says local governments can't interfere with this because, mm-hmm. you know, there's a safety issue. Will that trump the Cape Cod Commission's District of Critical Planning concern? I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch this play out.
Let me ask you about Nauset Regional School District. Yeah. Here's a school that's beginning to envision a new high school to replace its aging one. And the first step in that process is to ask the community what it would like to see, and that's what they were doing this week.
Yeah, a lot of talk about new schools on the Cape. Nauset is the public high school that serves the outermost towns, Brewster, East Amwell, Fletcher, Orleans, Provincetown. And they're just at the beginning of this process to take a look at the school. It's 50 years old. And the public forum was held this week with some of the designers that have brought on early on to this process. What's the wish list you'd like to see at a new school? Swimming pool was the top thing that came up. And then obviously some more secure facility, more collaborative space for working with students, renewable energy on site, less concrete. I don't know if you've been to Nauset.
That's a concrete campus.
Yeah, it is. It is. Also, it doesn't have the proper fire protection ventilation right now, and it's a little bit difficult for wheelchairs to cross the campus. This project has qualified for funding by the Mass School Building Authority, which we talked about earlier in the show, which would be about 50% reimbursement they'd get. It's going to require overrides on the town, and the feasibility study has already been completed. But, you know, should this be moving forward, expect construction to start in 2024.
So that's 5 years out still.
5 years out, yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people would be surprised by this, given that the school is out there on the Outer Cape. But at one point, it had 1,082 students. That was back in 2006. The new school would be built for about 905 students.
Which is about where they are now.
Right, right.
I want to ask you about Falmouth, a proposal in Falmouth for what might sound like an oxymoron to some people. It's a proposal for a luxury campground.
Yeah, it's referred to as glamping, and it's just really going to be an upscale camping
facility. As in glamorous camping.
As in glamorous camping. A development company in Boston has purchased a sale agreement for the Sipuisset Campground, which is on Palmer Ave. Sipuisset Campground and Cabins. And they've aligned with an operator out of San Francisco who has similar facilities in Santa Barbara, Yosemite, and on the Russian River. What this would be, Steve, is 98 Airstream trailers and 10 canvas tents. You know, kind of a campground.
But not the kind of tent you're probably thinking about.
No, as they say, their motto is, we want you to enjoy the spirit of camping with the creature comforts of a luxury hotel. So the Airstreams would have kitchens, queen-size beds, what they call luxurious linens, heated blankets, flat-screen TVs, sound systems, and a spa-type bathroom. And the tents aren't bad either. They'll have queen-size beds, lighting, electrical outlets. So different type of camping coming to Falmouth potentially. Some people aren't all that happy about it. They said this will pretty much be for adults and kind of leaves a lot of people who would typically go to a campground out in the cold, no pun intended. But taking a look at some of the other facilities that this company operates, it goes about $375 a night for an Airstream.
That's a little different than camping, probably, for most folks.
Right.
We heard from Brian Dowd about how some folks on the Vineyard are looking forward to Super Bowl Sunday. Cape Cod Times has a nice profile this week of one very big young Patriots fan who's actually been given a chance to go to the game.
Yeah, yep. This is definitely the feel-good story of the week, Steve. There's a 17-year-old from Mashpee. His name is Dylan Fasano. He has Duchenne muscular dystrophy, a very serious form of the disease. He's 17 years old. And the Make-A-Wish Foundation is sending him, he's already in Atlanta, him and his family to go to the big game. This is one big Patriots fan, if you read the story. He's very serious about the Patriots.
And not just the present-day Patriots. Oh, he knows Patriots history forward and backward.
He can tell you what happened years before he was born, when he went to the first Super Bowl in 1985. And he, I guess he's just a walking encyclopedia of Patriots information. So it is a great trip. This is the Make-A-Wish Foundation is making this happen. He has been a student in Mashpee Schools, but currently goes to a combination school and care facility in Canton, comes home for the weekends, soccer player there. And I thought the most interesting thing was they asked him about the outcome of the game. And he said, I don't even want to go there. I didn't even want to think about it.
He didn't want to make a prediction because he was superstitious.
That's right.
He was afraid that if he said anything, it might jinx the whole process.
Exactly.
We can all identify with that probably a little bit.
Yes.
That's our news roundup for the week. I want to thank my guest, Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, thanks for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
And thank you to our other contributors. We spoke with Landry Harlan at the Vineyard Gazette, Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Casey Myers at the Provincetown Banner, and Brian Dowd at the Martha's Vineyard Times. I'm Steve Junker. Thank you for listening.